Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Experience design is defined by Professors Jay Rossman and Matthew Durden as the process of intentionally orchestrating experience elements to provide opportunities for participants to co-create and sustain interactions that lead to results desired by the participant and the designer.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Measuring Success Right. My name is Spencer McWilliams.
And I'm Grant Frazier.
And today, we're going to be starting this new mini-series called Measuring Success Bites.
Da-da-da-do! That's our little theme song.
Yes, and it's a great one as well. So, Measuring Success Bites, we are basically going to be looking over the articles from the recent issue of the Marriott Student Review and give our commentary on them. They're great articles. If you haven't picked up an issue on campus, you totally should, or you can visit marriottstudentreview.org to read the articles from the recent issue. The article that we are going to be commenting on and reading on is titled Experience Design: What is it and how can it benefit you? And it is written by a student named Melissa Brown.
And I am very excited about this because, like, as a business student, this is one of the fun, fresh, new things that is, like, emerging in the business world. Like, it's really only been talked about for the last 10 years, so I'm super excited to read through this with you.
Oh, yeah. And I actually took an experience design class. Ooh. It's a general, actually. I forget for which general it's for, but it is EXDM 300.
Nice.
And it's called Creating a Good Life. So if you haven't taken that class, it fulfills a general, you totally should, because it taught me a lot about experience design. And like Grant said, it is an emerging, what would you call that? It's an emerging...
It's like just a new discipline or new way of like looking at a business or like how to, make it successful. So what did you do in the Creating a Good Life class? What was the like core of it?
So it's just like what the title of the class is. It's it's how to create a good life. And when I went into it, I didn't really have any expectations. I was just like, okay, I just need a general field. And this looks way more fun than all of the other classes that, or all of the other options there were. Mm-hmm. So basically in the class, we went through a lot of different like studies, especially in the psychology department. Positive psychology.
Yes.
That was a big thing that we talked about in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was expecting, since it was a business class, that we would be talking like on the business side of things, but it established a good foundation of happiness and how to implement that into your personal life. And it touched a little bit on like how to create good experiences if you were to go into the experience design management major. Mm. But if you were not an experience design major, it was just really good. I think I teared up a lot during that class, honestly.
It
like made me rethink, I don't know, my life and how I can facilitate a lot more happiness and what really made me happy, you know.
Wow, experience design allows us to dig deep, you know. It seems like that was a beneficial experience for you.
Yeah. So reading this article by Melissa was really cool because I was able to see just a lot of what I learned in that class be implemented into business, the business world, and I guess we can call it a business discipline now.
Mm-hmm. Experience design is defined by Professors Jay Rossman and Matthew Durden as the process of intentionally orchestrating experience elements to provide opportunities for participants to co-create and sustain interactions that lead to results desired by the participant and the designer.
Melissa also gives a really good example called the birthday cake example.
Mm-hmm.
That gives us kind of that shows us what experience design can look like in a more, I guess, everyday setting.
It gives us an easier definition than the one from the two professors, you
yes.
know, right in their academic papers. But yeah, so I'm ready to hear the cake
yeah.
example.
The way customers shop today is shifting. They are looking for more involvement with companies, and they want a story about the product and company they are choosing. Consumers are also looking for ways to make their lives easier. For example, think about a mother who wants to bake a birthday cake for her child. One option she has is to buy all the ingredients needed and make a cake from scratch. Another option is to buy a cake mix and mix in just a few more ingredients herself before putting it all in the oven. A third option is to go to the store and purchase a pre-made cake to have at the birthday party. Lastly, there's another option that is becoming increasingly popular. To go to a location such as Chuck E. Cheese, which can provide not only a cake, but also a fully planned and themed party.
See, that's a really cool definition, and I think explains it very well. And as like an economics nerd, I really love that because it's just kind of like the progression of how like goods just change over time. It's like eventually people want more than the cake mix, and so they can go just get the pre-made cake. And eventually, even that's not enough, and so then you get the themed experiences. And it feels like in a lot of areas in the economy, like that type of thing is happening more and more now. Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of an example off the top of my head.
It makes you think, like, what could happen beyond that? Or is that our stopping ground, you know?
I don't know.
Chuck E. Cheese is pretty... I mean, it's still pretty cool now. It was really cool when I was a kid. I don't know how popular it is now with the children, but...
Yeah. Well, I think... And experience design isn't necessarily just like creating that experience, but it's also about how you can imbue like experience into every aspect of some type of thing. Or like, no, I guess, what did I want to say here? Like experience design isn't necessarily about like an arcade or like somewhere you go to like experience something, but it's about making the buying experience or the purchasing experience more interesting and more memorable than just going into the store and buying the cake.
That reminds me of something that Melissa also mentioned in her article, which she called the progression of economic value, okay. Which is the trend that shifts commodities to goods to services and finally experience. And she talks about how, just like what you mentioned, like trying to create a positive experience for the participants, she talks about how experience design, the ultimate goal of it for the participants is to bring about positive memories, a desire to go back, and a motivation to tell their friends about the experience. So I think with those three goals in mind, like it just kind of brings a better definition of what businesses or what people who want to start businesses can do if they want to create better experiences for their store or whatever they're trying to sell. It can definitely be implemented in that.
Absolutely. And like a great example of like, I don't know, there are lots of great examples in the economy of places where this happens, but like one that comes to my mind immediately is like when you go to a restaurant like Teppanyaki Japanese Grill, like the type of place where they cook right in front of you because...
My favorite.
Exactly. I know, me too. And like you can catch the shrimp in your mouth, but it's like, it's not exactly even about the food that makes you go there. When you think about going there, you think about that experience, and that's what experience design is all about. It's about making something that's more memorable than just the product you give. It's about making the entire time that a person is in your establishment or business enjoyable and something that they just want to tell everyone about.
Yeah, that goes right into what Melissa also talks about in her article, which
Melissa covers it all.
Yeah, you know, she really did.
Yeah, go Melissa.
She talks about positive touch points. Can you imagine what that might be, or
a positive
touch
point, like in a business?
Yes.
let's see. I'd imagine it's like, okay, I'm gonna just take a shot in the dark here. It's like kind of the timeline of the experience that you're in there, like having little positive aspects kind of just sprinkled throughout. Oh, did I get that?
Grant, did you read this before you came?
I did. I think I would be doing a bad job if I didn't read this before I came.
No, that pretty much nailed it.
Each interaction your customers have with your company is called a touch point. In their book, Designing Experiences, authors J. Robert Rossman and Matthew Durden compare the creation of touchpoints to the composition of a pointillist painting. Up close, each dot seems random and mismatched, but by taking a few steps back, one can see the larger masterpiece those points create. The same principle applies to creating a great experience. The experience is a collection of touchpoints, each deliberately designed to elicit specific emotions and reactions. An experienced designer must give attention to the details of these touch points in the same way pointillist artists give specific care to each of their painted points.
This made me think of the most grand experienced design company, Disney.
Yes, they are like mentioned in, I think, every experienced design class.
Oh, yeah.
Just how like Disneyland, Disney World is like the one that just does it better than anybody else.
Yes. And I recently went to Disney World this past January. Yeah.
Did you notice any positive touch points in your experience there? Any small little details?
Yes, I noticed ton. Well, I think reading this and then thinking about my Disney World experience, because that was my first time at Disney World. I've been to Disneyland, but I feel like Disney World's just a whole other experience. But again, they're both kind of the same since they're under Disney. Mm-hmm. I think the little, well, if you go to every, you know how Disney World has different theme parks,
yes.
Right? So every theme park, they have their employees, which they call cast members. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is that in every park, the cast members, you know, they're employees, but they play the part of whatever park they're in. So we were at Galaxy's Edge, the new Star Wars land. And it's so funny. The cast members in Galaxy's Edge, they would talk to us as if, you know, we were immersed in the actual Star Wars world. So they would say some kind of greeting.
That's so fun.
I forgot what the greeting was, but they would tell you things like as if you were actually in Star Wars. And, you know, it, the way that they spoke to us and interacted with us just made us feel like, I don't know, kind of like main character energy.
Yeah. Main character energy, you know, exactly. Just, it's like you're part of the movie.
Yeah, just me and my husband holding our little blue milk, and we're like, wow, like, we are in Star Wars. So that was definitely a little detail that made me think of just how Disney is able to make such a magical experience, not only for just little children, but also for adults. And something else I learned about Disney World and Disneyland, too, I think, is that they also have, or they used to have, a hidden, like, trading card game that you could play all over the park.
Oh,
as if the rides weren't enough.
Yeah, that's right? Insane. There's always, like, little, I feel like you always hear little stories or secrets about Disney. And it's just, like, part of the mystery, and it makes it just so much more exciting, too, you know?
That's the magic. Yeah, the trading card game, you go to I forget which land it is. It's by the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Okay.
But there's, like, a little post that you can get trading cards, and then all over the park there's just little, and it's signified by this I forget what it's called, but you're able to trade cards with other people at the park that are playing, and there's some way that you can tell that other people are playing, and you go to different screens that are hidden all over the park that tell you, I don't know, it's, you would have to, if you haven't heard about this, you guys need to look it up, because it's really interesting how Disney's able just to include that with all the other amazing, fun things that you can do there.
Yeah, they just add in a lot of different elements to make it like something like appealing for everybody, and also like just a complex experience that there's always like something new to do, you know?
Yeah.
Something that I noticed, I'm reading this book called Happy City by Charles Montgomery, and it's kind of like a book about urban design and like how to make walkable cities and how to make like cities that are enjoyable for everyone. And he starts off the book talking like at length about Disneyland. And so there are like a couple things, like when you walk through Disneyland, the first thing you go through is Main Street USA, which is like a little model town of like old timey Los Angeles. And it's actually like, there's a lot of tiny details that people don't notice, but like, for example, around the holidays, they have like scent, they have little like air fresheners all over the park that make it smell like gingerbread. So like it, when you walk around, it just faintly kind of feels like it's the holidays. And the one thing that I think is really interesting is like they have these buildings all around, and you can like go and explore all of them, but they're actually built to like 7/8 scale, and that was like by design. Like they are meant to, like the first floor of the building is a normal height, but as they go up, like each floor gets progressively smaller, and it creates like a forced perspective. So when you look up, it looks like you're looking at these tall buildings, but at the same time, they're like not looming or daunting or make you feel like you are overwhelmed by like the cityscape. So you get this like feeling that you are in a real full-size city, but it's a little bit smaller than it should be. And the castle itself, like the main Disney castle, is also much smaller than it looks from a distance. And that's because like they use all of these different elements and like tricks of perspective to make it seem like you are really part of this world. It's just a very interesting thing that they do. And like Disney is the expert in this, and it's why everybody loves Disneyland and Disney World. It's like unparalleled.
That is crazy about the forced perspective thing. Now it makes me, whenever I go back, I'm definitely going to try to notice that and think, I see what you're doing there, Disney.
We notice what you're doing, Walt Disney.
It's interesting that you pull that up, because when you say that that does make help guests feel like that they are in a different world, it's, like I said, it gives off main character energy, and that is exactly what Disney is trying to do. I read this article that they interviewed he's an architectural historian, but he also wrote the book called Walt Disney's Disneyland. And he said about the architecture of Disney and just the way that they designed the whole experience, that you're not only experiencing someone guiding you through the story, but you're the main character. If you've ever been on the ride, you know that you really do feel like the main character. And so I really think that does touch on what Melissa explains about the goal of experience design and how it's supposed to bring positive memories, which I'm sure it has for many people, a desire to go back, me all the time, and a motivation to tell others about their experience. Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting because, like, when you think about Disneyland, they don't necessarily even have the best roller coasters of any park in the country, you know?
Oh, like, definitely not.
Yeah, definitely not. But, like, there are, like, even in California, there are other places you could go with, yes, like, with way better roller coasters. But Disney doesn't care about that. They care about making a theme park that is, like, memorable rather than one that has the tallest roller coaster. And I think it's a good example for, like, other businesses as well, that it's not always about doing the most, but about making your customers feel or create the most memories.
Yeah.
And that's experience design.
That is experience design. Another thing that Melissa talks about as a really critical touch point is the use of emotion.
One critical key to touch points is the use of emotions. As stated in the International Journal of Contemporary Hospitality Management, emotions are a core component of experiences, and emotions make an experience memorable.
Grant, when you have walked into a business, what kind of emotions do you typically feel? Positive ones, or does it really depend on the business?
Well, when I walk into a grocery store, I immediately get really frustrated because I'm really bad at finding things, and I always I always forget something, and so I just hate grocery stores. So bad experience design there, but it's a grocery store.
They could do better,
exactly. You know, I love walking into Crumbl, actually, like the local Provo Crumbl,
yeah,
because I don't know, it's not like they're necessarily completely focusing on experience design, but you walk in and they've got these huge monitors that show like their beautiful promo videos of all the cookies of the week, and it just makes me hungry. You can smell them right there, and it's like the whole place is white and chic, and like they've got the pretty pink boxes. So I feel like I enjoy that experience a lot, but I don't know. Most businesses, I feel like I'm indifferent to when I walk in.
How can you add emotions to interactions? The best way to do this is to surprise people. Find ways you can meet your customers' needs in a way they might not expect.
So I think with your Crumbl experience, because I feel that all the time when I walk into Crumbl, just the whiff of all of just the cookies being made. And I think also when you walk in, you see them making it. Like, mm-hmm, they're very transparent. You see the workers at work making those cookies. And that's a little bit of an element of surprise. Because when you walk into places, you don't always see the person making the thing, mm-hmm, which, you know, can be a little sketchy sometimes, depending on the place you go. But I definitely think that's a really good element of surprise that makes me feel like, oh, like, if they're okay showing me how they're making their cookies, I'm okay eating them. And they're so good, so.
Mm. The surprise is interesting because I went to get a haircut the other day, and I usually, like, I'm just a guy. I usually go to Great Clips because, like, I never cared that much about my hair, but I was recently told that I should try maybe going to, like, a real hair salon. And I went to a hair salon in Orem, and I walked in, and, like, immediately they asked if I wanted a drink, and I got, like, an ice cold lemonade while I waited for my haircut. It was very fancy. It was a salon, so I got like the full like hair treatment, the shampoo and stuff, and I was like, okay, well, I'm never going back to Great Clips, you know. And I think like just the little elements that they're able to add in there makes it an enjoyable like experience. Again, it's not like I'm just going in, getting my hair cut, and then I'm sad afterward because it doesn't look good. It's like I get the whole nine yards. You get like the scalp massage and then the lemonade. I felt very fancy.
Yeah. And that's exactly what she points out. That is exactly what Melissa points out. In her article, she talks about how it could be the simplest of things. So, you know, you don't have to go all the way like Disneyland to put in all of these big details to create emotions, but just like giving guests iced lemonade. It was lemonade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Giving guests iced lemonade, or I don't know, just doing like little simple things, that simple forms of customer service that can really improve the satisfaction of whoever's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it could always be the little things.
Exactly. And do you remember what Melissa said in her article about, I thought it was really interesting, the comparison she made to like advertising versus experience design. Like, do you remember reading about that?
I don't think I do.
Okay, well, I can explain it real quick. So I really liked it because Melissa mentions that like traditional advertising doesn't work as well as it used to, you know, like just putting up a billboard or just like putting up posters around town, like that stuff doesn't work the same way. And experience design is kind of like in a lot of ways, it's a modern method of advertising, because the idea is that a customer is going to go into your store and they're going to be completely wowed and surprised by the experience that they had. Like, it's going to be a shopping experience completely different from anything else they've had in a store like that, and that they're going to go tell all of their friends about it.
Yes.
So the idea isn't, you know, the idea isn't just to like there's a very good incentive for businesses to do this, mm-hmm. because it can, like, it's one of the better forms of advertising. People don't trust billboards as much anymore. People don't trust traditional advertising nearly as much as they do word of mouth. Like, that's always going to be the best way to grow a business. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just thought that was a really interesting comparison, because I'd never thought about experience design as advertising.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to intertwine both of those, because mm-hmm. it is true. People's experiences, as they share with their friends or share with other people, whether it be on social media, mm-hmm. which I think is definitely a great catalyst for experience design, you know, I have definitely seen my friends post on their story places that they have gone to, post about their experiences, and I just take their word just because it sounded great, mm-hmm. the way that they describe it. And if your friends are trustworthy, it definitely helps in wanting to go to that business or something. So
yeah, absolutely. And you see, even cities do this too. Like, you look around Provo, we have murals everywhere, and
yeah.
that's like by design. Like, a lot of independent artists made those, but the idea is that people will post those murals around, like, on social media, and then people will be like, wow, I want to go to that area, and then they will go support local downtown businesses. So the idea with, like, a lot of these, like, murals in malls and cities is to try and, like, create more of a sense of life and, like, get more people into their downtown areas and, you know, go buy some products.
Yeah, I think that's great. So another thing that Melissa talks about, okay. that towards the end of her article, as she kind of wraps up trying to talk about how we can do this as business students or just as students in general, she talks about how it's important that businesses need to stay connected with their customers. Mm-hmm. And like we've mentioned, in order to do that, you have to implement really good experience design, but you also need to keep up with trends.
Yes. Ooh, I'm not good at following. I don't know. I'm not good at keeping up with the trends. I feel like a grandpa sometimes. Anyway.
I know. I feel like I know a trend, and then I see some high schooler post something, and I'm like, wait, is that cool now? And then
we're old, Spencer.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's hard to say that at 20, almost 23. I feel like I'm old.
My ripe old age of 20.
Yeah. Hey, you've passed the teen, so
yes,
that is old.
Mm-hmm. So what types of trends? Does she mention anything?
So she doesn't mention any specific trends.
Okay.
But something that I kind of looked up and researched on the side.
Ooh.
Kind of talks a little bit about how when we notice these trends, and if you are a entrepreneur and if you're trying to start a business and you want to keep up with the trends, something that'll really help with that is innovation.
Mm.
And I read an article with a fella named Brian Solis, who is a global innovation evangelist.
Oh man, interesting. Okay.
I did not know what that was, but
feels apparently, like a self-made title, but also like full respect to him, you know?
I know. It does sound self-made, but I hear it and I believe it.
Okay.
So,
all right.
He explained that being a global innovation evangelist was basically they study how technology is changing markets and behaviors.
Okay. So interesting.
That
kind
of helps you kind of imagine mm-hmm. what he might do. Anyway, he did an interview with McKinsey and he talked about retailers as experienced designers. And something that a quote that he said that I thought was really cool was he asked, are you a retailer or are you an experienced designer and retail just happens to be a facility of how you transact?
Mm.
So he mentions that retailers will need to demonstrate imagination as part of your brand.
Okay, interesting. So the idea is like, I like to not make people just think of you as a clothing store, but like
yeah.
as a place to go that sells clothing.
Yes.
And like a place to go because it's a great experience and then you get your clothes there too.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of idea he's pitching? Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a really interesting article, and he like is trying to predict what shopping is going to be like in 2030.
Okay.
Sounds like a far away, but when you think about it, it's not too far away.
It's interesting
to think how, you know, that is, I think that's how retail and any kind of store is going to be.
Hmm.
And a store that I thought of just that I think encapsulates this experience or his definition of what retail is going to be and how they can innovate stores to follow these trends is, so it's a fictional it's a fictional store from a television show called Schitt's Creek.
S-C-H-I-T-T, everybody. So yes. we're a clean podcast.
Yes, it is. It's a great show. It's very funny. But there is a store in the show that's called Rose Apothecary. If you have never seen the show, you might not know what they sell. But the main, or one of the main characters, his name is David. This is a store that he opened up in this really small town that's called Schitt's Creek. Mm-hmm. And he gives a really good explanation of what the store is. And I think this, like I said, I think this follows with what Brian was explaining in his interview. Ooh. So David describes Rose Apothecary as...
Well, it's a general store, but it's also a very specific store. Huh. And it's also not just a store. It's like a place where people can come and get coffee or drinks, but it's not a coffee shop, nor is it a bar.
Okay, so we're pretty clear on what it's not.
Yeah, it's an environment, and yes, we will be selling things, but it's more like a branded immersive experience.
Oh, I love it. David, wise words from him.
And I know, right?
That's very funny. And he's kind of, in the show, he's kind of like this oddball character. Like, he's very trendy, you know? Like,
yes.
He's in a small rural town, but he dresses like he's like in Fashion Week in New York City.
Yes.
And he's very funny. And so the show, it seems like they're like teasing at it a little bit, like making fun of it. But David's also very on the trend in the show, you know? So
yes.
He's kind of hitting on exactly what all of these stores and like big businesses are trying to push toward now anyway, like is to create a store where it's not just one thing, where it is an entire environment you go to, because like you can go somewhere to get multiple things and just to have an experience that you know is, that you can feel confident is going to be memorable and a good time.
Yes. And I think in the show, David does a great job of, you know, trying to follow that idea with a Rose Apothecary. Mm-hmm. And it's a great, if you want to, I wouldn't say if you want to learn experience design, I would watch the show, but keep that
better,
in mind if you ever,
sources for that, but,
yeah.
But keep in mind, look for that if you watch Schitt's Creek.
Yes. All right. Lastly, Melissa talks about how we can begin using experience design in businesses that we want to be a part of, or just as a business, or yeah. Here, I should redo that again. Lastly, Melissa talks about how we can begin as business owners in implementing experience design.
First, decide how you want to be perceived and how you want your customers to feel in their interactions with you and your company. Think about not only the overall public reaction, but also the sorts of reactions and emotions that your touchpoint moments should inspire in your customers. Next, decide what elements you can add or take away to elicit your desired reaction. Start small. Make a few changes at a time and see how they work before you redo your entire process, only to find out you are on the wrong track. Pay attention to the results you are getting and try to gather feedback.
I feel like when implementing experience design into a business, it would just be, I don't know, you just kind of think, do I need to do some big, like...
Do I need to make Disneyland from scratch?
Yeah. Do I need to get air fresheners that just... spray intermittently throughout the store.
It wouldn't hurt, you know, but no, there's definitely smaller ways to start, you know, like a hair salon that gives you lemonade.
Yeah.
And that's like very cheap for them. It's not very expensive. They had like sodas and stuff too, and that's like 10 cents a cup, you know.
Yeah.
Once you buy a machine. But it's like you don't have to invest all that much to give customers something that they're just like, oh, I didn't expect that I would get a nice cold drink at this hair salon.
Yeah. And most importantly, as you do those small things and, you know, you give the iced water to the customers, mm-hmm. You know, look at their reactions, get some feedback from them, and try to see how you can either make the experience better or something that you might need to take away.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Well, I think that this is interesting, you know, not just for people who are going to go work at a company and try and pitch some experience design project or like entrepreneurs, but also for people more generally who were like going to stores and maybe have like noticed this type of thing but didn't have the word for it, you know.
Yeah.
Like when you walk into a store now, you might see a lot of the trendy new shops are trying to incorporate experience design, trying to make little positive moments all throughout their store and see if you can notice those and you know, critique them or notice them and love them, you know. You're just like, keep an eye out.
It's kind of fun to kind of see what they try to do, and I feel like when I do notice those things, I appreciate the company even more for wanting to do that, because then I feel more appreciated as a customer and I feel like I'll be somewhat well taken care of if I'm in there. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is great.
Well, this has been a fun read-through today, Spencer. Thank you for guiding us through that measuring success bite.
Yes, of course. And thank you so much, Melissa Brown, for writing an incredible article that allowed Grant and I to learn a little bit more about experience design as we talked about it today.
Absolutely. It was a wonderful article. And again, you can check out more articles at MarriottStudentReview.org. And so before we go today, we wanted to mention that some exciting news that Measuring Success Right is going to be starting our own Instagram page. So
Yay!
You can follow us. Woo! You can follow us starting today, Monday, at Measuring Success Right on Instagram. And you can also follow our sister page at Marriott Student Review, who we are closely associated with. So we're going to be posting little audio snippets there. We're going to be updating about new episodes, posting stories, getting listener comments and feedback. So if you want to engage with Measuring Success Right more often and in a more informal way, then follow our Instagram.
Yep, we're happy to interact with you all and get to post some fun things.
Now we're excited. We're aiming for 1 million followers by the end of the year. So we've got a long way to go from zero today, you know.
Well, thank you all for listening. We hope you all have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next time on Measuring Success Right.
Bye, everyone.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at MarriottStudentReview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.